Good morning and welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey. And of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of the community, the people that are making things happen for your benefit and mine. And very appropriately on this Christmas, during this Christmas holiday, we have a guest in the house who is going to talk about his new newsletter, for one thing. I guess it's new. It's Breakaway Life, the newsletter, and a new play coming up, Hiding in Plain Sight. The Second Tower is the name of the play. The play builds Hiding in Plain Sight. It's a play exploring the harmony between science and the Bible narrative. And so our guest, scholar in residence here at the University of Memphis, Elder Joseph Loeb, who is the writer of all this. How you doing, Dr. Loeb?
I'm blessed. Thank you so much, Malvin. Thank you for having me, and thank you for taking the time to talk about this.
Well, this is an appropriate subject. I mean, we've had a lot of things that make people reach back and say, oh, God.
Yes, yes.
And the relationship between science, the Big Bang, the whole works, and religion has been a topic of interest and debate for centuries now.
Well, yes, and there is so much going on because, you know, science is changing things so much. And the real question is, well, what does the Bible say about it? And I think that's the thing that people really want to know.
Yeah. Well, now, you got to tell us a little bit about the Second Tower as we get started.
Well, I basically what I would say is that I was involved some years ago in putting together computer labs for kids. We've developed these computer labs for kids working with the digital divide since 1992. This is our 20th year. Okay. And so my goal was, how do you have an on-ramp to the information superhighway way back then? And it started innocently enough. I mean, I grew up in church, and my grandfather was a pastor and all those things. So the Bible's all I knew and the world. And so we got to the point to where we were setting up these computer labs, and we were having a celebration for the first 100 centers that we had completed. And my friend, actor-director Bill Duke, got up to speak, and he said, well, you know, in the future, computers will declare themselves conscious and self-aware, and we will give them rights as people and say that they are real. I said, oh, Bill, come on.
Bill Duke, that name is familiar. He's an actor, right?
Yes, he's an actor. He starred in the movie Predator, the big other movies as well, and things. He's just a great guy, and has been involved in looking at big questions over the years, and so we had a chance to share in this idea, and it was a tremendous book. And I read about, for the first time, I read about a guy named Ray Kurzweil,
is that where he got his reference from?
Yes, that was the book that he was reading at the time. It was called Age of the Spiritual Machines. That was one of Ray Kurzweil's first books. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you might not have known who he is.
Not until we started talking about this, as a matter of fact.
But he is the person who invented the flatbed scanner, optical character recognition, you know, where you scan the document in and it's able to read it and tell it what it is. And also he developed text-to-speech, computer text-to-speech, and a pioneer in artificial intelligence. So when he said those kinds of things, I couldn't just dismiss him as some crazy crackpot somewhere.
Because he seems to know from whence he speaks.
Well, you know, he has multiple PhDs from MIT and Harvard, and he's considered the Thomas Edison of our time.
You know, that idea is not new as far as Hollywood is concerned. 2001, A Space Odyssey was the first one, I think.
There are a lot of movies, science fiction, science fact. My real point is, okay, well, where does the Bible come in and go out? Right. You know, where does the narrative, what does the narrative say about the harmony between science and the Bible narrative itself? I mean, what does it say about that? And so that was the area that I wanted to explore, because I wanted to know what was God's response to what Ray Kurzweil had said.
Well, the idea of consciousness in a machine is really far out there.
Well, you know, it seems as though that's true, except for the fact that when you start reading some of the things that are going on today around artificial intelligence, and one of the articles I quote in the book is based on a New York Times report where basically the guy is saying, well, look, I understand what's happening, but then, okay, well, then how do we transfer this understanding of what's going on into the real world? And so this technology has gotten to the place to where it's about to cross what we call an event horizon. There's a series of events that will happen where who we are will no longer just be in our biology. It'll be in the computer itself. And so if something happens to us, there's a backup copy. You know, I mean, it's incredible.
It is, and that goes along with the biological research of cloning and what have you.
Well, that is true. Well, the real breakthrough came in 2000 when they completed the coding of the human genome. And that's when the real coding and the real breakthrough came, because that way you had a complete alphabet of everything you need to make human genes. And then, you know, you found out that human genes vary by plus or minus 1%. And so the thing that occurred to me was, gee, the best verse in the Bible I've ever heard was John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life. And I said, gee, if that's 3:16, and it varies by 1%, so that's plus or minus 1. Well, what are the other verses around that? And so that's what got me started.
3:15, so there's 3.15 billion letters in the gene, in the human chromosome.
Human DNA. That is correct.
And then the chapter is 3:15.
I attended a conference one time where I was asking the guy, well, how would I try to explain this? And he says, well, maybe you just put a dot up on the board as first to start, just a single dot. And I said, well, why would you do that? He says, well, the difference between what you're describing and what the Bible describes is basically one dot in terms of expression. So, well, how do you get to that? Well, if you look at Genesis or John 3:15, 3:15, or you look at the number 3.15 billion, and the difference between the expressions of those two numbers is a single dot.
Yeah, and that's it. That's
an expression. And so really what I think it says is that it's an expression of how much God loves us.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, he puts the number of our DNA in the most important verse in the Bible as it relates to the relationship between human beings and God. I did a Google search to look up, so what is the most important verse in the Bible? And when you do a Google search on something like that, it comes up and people say, it's Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created, and you, nothing else happens without that. Well, I think that's very true. The only problem, my point is, Genesis 3:15 is the most important verse as it relates to us and our relationship
with God.
That's correct. You see,
and of course now that comes back into what time it is right now. That you explain that to me as that was God's promise to us, and the first inception of Christ.
That is correct, and that is in Genesis 3:15, where it says, "And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and he shall crush thy head, and thou shalt strike his heel." And what it is as God was putting Adam and Eve out of the garden, he makes provision for them to get back in. As he's putting them out because of their disobedience and sin, he's then saying, okay, I know you're not strong enough, but I'm going to provide somebody so that ultimately in your weakness, you'll be strong. The seed of the woman, women don't have seed. So there would be a, quote, virgin birth at some point that would then deliver all of humanity. What a love story.
It is. We discussed that before, too. My father used to say the same thing you say, that the Bible is a love story.
Well, I think that's one of the things that we've gotten away from. Here is a major challenge about this. That is, given that there is a match between science itself and the biblical narrative, then there's a problem because there wouldn't necessarily be a match between that and, quote, organized religion.
Yeah, I can dig that.
It's kind of hard to match all of those. If you got two, you can go from there. And obviously that means like you're picking a fight with everybody's religion and all that. Well, there are elements included in all of the religions, you see. Yeah. But at the same time, the basic premise is it's very straightforward.
We spoke of that before, too, that there are elements in all religions that relate to each one. There are similar elements, similar incidents.
That's correct.
In every religion that's the same as the other one.
For example, in basically every religion and in every culture, there is some group of that in that culture that survived the flood.
Right.
Even hieroglyphics and everything else, you see there are all of these different lists of people who did all these other things, but in every culture, somebody survived. I know all these other people drowned, but, our group made it. Just a few people from our group made it, and that's pervasive in every single culture.
If you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Dr. Joseph Loeb, Elder Joseph Loeb, and we're talking about his new play that's going to be coming up, The Second Tower, which is exploring the harmony between science and the biblical narrative. And we're talking about things right now that, of course, when you talk about science, I talked to Alan Lightman from MIT not too very long ago. And then Jonathan Jadakin did an interview with a guy who wrote a book that we don't need God anymore. There's no need for God anymore. Jonathan did an interview with him. But and Alan Lightman, on the other hand, being a physicist, he still has his religious beliefs. And he also separates the science from the gospel, but from religion. But at the same time, there are so many elements that run together. You've seen this now. This is what you're talking. Do you have difficulty getting these ideas over to your scientific?
I think from the science point of view, you can get those ideas over to them. The real challenge is that people like quick answers. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there is a match, and given that there is a match between science and the biblical narrative, you don't pump it out in a second. You have to go through and study to see how it came about and what are the matches. You have to spend some time looking through them. And as you do, you find out at every point, God always gets the math right. You see, that's the beauty of it. That at some point, like, for example, in Job, it talks about by what way is light parted, which scatters the east wind over the earth. Actually, if you just look at that closely, you'll see, okay, by what way is light divided? And Einstein actually won his Nobel Prize for his description of light. He understood that light was divided and that light was...
The prism?
It was divided between electricity and magnetism.
Oh, okay.
And so the electricity then charges up the magnetism that makes it shine. Then as it shimmers forth, it then recharges up the electricity. So it just keeps going forward in a loop. And then that's how you're able to tell. And so the whole idea is that you're able to get closer and closer. And the speed of light is determined by the speed of the observer. So as things get closer to the speed of light, it tends to warp and shape. You see, so that's why the Bible says that the light then shines on the ocean and then scatters the wind, because that's where the wind comes from. The wind comes from the movement of evaporation of water coming off of the ocean, going back up. Okay, and that caused the movement of the water, which then generates the wind.
of course, with the lunar gravity as well.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Adding to it, which makes the tide.
Sure, absolutely. And so that's how you get it. So you find that this God so loves us until he just delicately and intricately wove into all of this. Now, the other thing is that technology is not the same as science.
Okay, you have to explain that.
Well, science is what it is. It's the phenomena of the natural universe. It's mathematics. It's physics. Right. Technology is what we make. You know, this microphone, we created that. This radio station, all of those are things that we've made. Technology was actually a response of Cain. You remember Cain and Abel? Mm. Well, after he killed his brother, he went forth to build a city. And he named it after his son, Enoch. So once Cain went to build this city, he then developed this technology. And that's how you got urban dwellers. And if you read through it, you'll find out. That's where you get metal work, and that's where you get agribusiness, and that's where you get music.
The founding of the trades.
Absolutely. You also get, you know, the first person, first guy to have two wives. So that was Cain's descendants as well. You know. So my point is that there's so much here, but it doesn't just pop off the page. You have to spend time reading it.
You have to research it.
Well, what happened with me is when I was a kid, my grandfather used to just always tell me stories. And it wasn't until I got older and started reading for myself that I found out that the stories he was telling me were actually Bible stories. You see, and so that means I learned the Bible as a narrative, and I learned the stories of the Bible so that they connect. And that's what makes it so important and makes it so key for us to understand. If somebody commits a crime, we basically convict them on their intent. You see, that's the whole idea of conspiracy. Did you intend to do this? You know, where you have a plan. So God is really saying, I have a plan to save you. The other problem is there's a devil who has a plan for us not to be saved.
Right. Now, of our generation, people went to school, went to church every Sunday. We went to vacation Bible schools. The church was the foundation of the community, and that idea that of social order has sort of gone by the wayside, sort of, right now. There are still strong religious groups and churches and what have you, but the general consensus seems to be that we are headed toward a more secular society that has no religion, as it were.
Well, I think so, and to many ways, I think I'm going to be a part of the birth of the new religious, non-religious. I mean, I don't know how you really say it, but the real challenge is that our organized religions have really failed us in so many ways.
They've corrupted themselves.
Well, yeah. Because they have a, you know, the mortgage is due, okay, on the building. Now, if I don't say the right thing up here, I won't have enough money so I can pay the mortgage and put my kids through school and pay the secretary salary and all those things. So it limits certain things that can be said based on our own personal needs. And that's across the board in all kinds of churches and religions.
Right.
And so that's the real challenge that we face, that somehow who this God is, we have to understand it's completely separate from what we say.
As a matter of fact, we discussed that a little bit before, too, that every culture, when I took Dr. Collins' cultural anthropology class,
yes,
we came across the idea that every culture from the very beginning has always had a belief in a superior being.
I agree. Well, see, that's a part of where the title comes in, the second tower. So the first tower is actually the Tower of Babel.
Okay.
And that's where the different languages. Well, language is also culture.
Right.
The languages were then broken apart, you know, so that everybody then starts speaking. You're building this building as they were, or working on this project, and then all of a sudden, everybody start. One guy speaking Swahili, the other one speaking Japanese, the other one speaking Chinese, the other one speaking Farsi and English, and so on and so forth. But the other, here's the key part. In every single culture, there is a life that is self-directed and a life that is God-directed. You see, based on the children of Adam and Eve, you have Cain and his descendants. Well, you would have had Abel, but, you know, he got cut off short. Yeah. So you end up with Seth. And Seth
that's
is
the son of Cain.
Seth is the son of Adam and Eve. He was their third child.
Okay. Yeah.
And he then represents the line in which Christ comes out of. Uh-huh. And so that's the life that is God directed. That's the life that is dependent, you see, on God for whatever it is that we get. We are fragile in Him. But the other life, the king type life, the self directed life, well, we don't need God for anything. We'll do what we want.
Right.
And that was the group that set out to build the tower. You see.
And it seems like I was thinking about that this morning, some of the things that are happening in our culture right now here in America are so arbitrary of conscience. How can people be so unconscionable to do some of the things that are being done right now? And I think it has a lot to do with our drifting away from the morality of the church.
I think the organized religion has gotten to the point to where it serves its own interests
and
has left out serving the interests of God and serving the interests as, I mean, imagine how far Jesus would get if he was started to come down the street and be in normal churches. I mean, yeah. First of all, he wouldn't have any money, so they wouldn't really want to talk to him.
That'd be a problem right there.
Wouldn't have the finest of clothes, so you know that would limit what. And so that was his influence would then be limited, based not based on what he says, but just what the outward trappings are.
Yeah, and now okay, so that gets back to technology, though. We are that was his time 3,000 years ago. Back in those days, 2,000 years ago. The idea of that light switch over there, that would have been a miracle to someone.
Yes.
Within our time, we have become a part of God's science fiction. in real life, the iPhone
Siri.
Siri, yeah, the iPhone with the Siri.
She's great.
Yeah.
You know, if you have an assistant, you might not need one if you have a good Siri.
But if we are, how do we confront people and talk to people to get them to understand that the living the second life or the second part of life within the moral framework of a religion is a necessary thing, even though we have modern technology.
I think St. Augustine said it best. He said there's a God-shaped hole in all of us. There's a part of us that nothing can fill but the love of God. And I think what we've seen in our organized religions is that we've gotten away from that single piece to where he touches us and where we touch him and where we're able. You know, the requirement of religion and of the Bible is very straightforward. It says, you know, love mercy, do justly, and walk humbly with thy God. You know, you want to know how to be successful with God? Okay. Love being kind. Mm. That's your first one. Here's your second one. Do what is fair. Do justice. Be fair in your function. You know. See, so do justly, love mercy, and focus on the feeble. You see, that's the message of the Bible. What does thy require of thee, O man, but to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God? That's the requirement. Well, now, there's no real conflict in that, but we've gotten so far afield because of our own personal interests.
We throw out the idea of conscience.
Yes.
If you just tuned in once again, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Dr. Joseph Loeb, who is, tell us a little bit about Breakaway Life, the newsletter.
Breakaway Life is really a name I came up with. Breakaway Technologies is our company, mm-hmm. and Breakaway Life is my ministry part of it. I mean, I grew up in the church, but I just couldn't handle trying to be a minister in that system. Not because it was anything so awfully wrong with it. It's just that it was something so awfully wrong with it.
It's very difficult. I was trying to be the music director at a church, and I was very disillusioned with the way the pastor.
Like I see, there's so many competing interests. Yeah. They're the interests of what is best for the organization that has to be maintained. If you're going to have something, you have to have a building. You have to have people. They have to come and give money, and so on and so forth. Well, that kind of limits what you can say.
Of course, yes.
You see. Here's another thing that we're really having to focus on. We live in a society that is so pervasive with guns and shootings, as we just got through witnessing just this past time with all these children. But the other problem with that is that they're marching off with our DNA and reconfiguring what it means to be human. And there's not even a word being said about it.
It's our humanity is just being squandered.
You know, I mean, it's just being, once you, the whole reason for decoding the human DNA is very straightforward, is to make better medicines.
Of course, figure out how to cure.
Sure, and so you don't have side effects. Well, what's interesting about that is, okay, you get these medicines and you get basically man's version of eternal life. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to live long enough to live forever.
And this goes back, again, this goes right into the situation of the cures for the disease, John 3:14.
That's right. That's right. John 3:14 is the first mention, reference to the first mention of medicine in the Bible.
Yeah.
You see, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man must be lifted up.
All right. Oh,
you see. So that our traditional symbol of medicine now is a serpent on the stick.
And that's very appropriate.
Sure. And that's where it comes from. It comes from that reference that the children of Israel in the wilderness, they decided that they didn't want Moses to be the leader. They were sick of God. And they wanted to do some other things. They wanted to go back to Egypt. Didn't quite work out that way. So God let these serpents started stinging them. And the people started dying. And so they went to Moses and said, well, can't you help? You know, something wrong. We're dying. What can we do? And Moses said, he talked to God. God said, okay, take the same thing that was stinging them, put it on a stick and raise it up. And everybody who looks shall live. And that's where we get our term look and live.
And the symbol for medicine now.
And the traditional symbol of medicine. You know, and when you go meet any doctor, any medical, it has a serpent on a stick.
You know, those things, those are the sort of things that we really don't know about. We really don't grasp those things right away, just in common knowledge. But a little research, a little study, and you can pick up on those ironies within.
I think that's the coolest part about it, is that that's why part of the newsletter is hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
There are things that are just right in front of us. You have that John 3:16, and you have it as it's broken down. Would you read what it says in terms of that verse? How come that's the greatest verse in the Bible?
John 3's entry of Christ. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall have everlasting life.
So for God, the greatest being. See there on the second page?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right on the side, for God.
Oh, yeah. For God, the greatest being. So the greatest degree loved, the greatest affection, the world, the greatest object of love that he gave, the greatest act, his only, the greatest treasure, begotten, the greatest relationship, Son, the greatest gift, that whosoever, the greatest company, believeth, the greatest trust in him, the greatest object of faith, should not perish, the greatest deliverance, but have the greatest assurance, everlasting, the greatest promise, life, the greatest blessing.
Isn't that a blessing? Elmer Towns did that in the Gospel of John. When I was in seminary, I read the book and just kept it all these years. And so it made sense to me that that's the greatest verse in the Bible. Yeah. You see, it's wonderful that God created the earth and all that, but how does that relate to me? And I still got to try to live this thing out.
And that's described in the second tower. Now, when is the play going to be?
We're going to do a series of lectures first, and we're starting the first one in the second week in February.
Here on campus.
Okay. And it'll be announced. We'll do some promos before then. We'll do a drop-in for this piece as well.
Right.
But that's our goal, is to really help us understand that these machines that we created are taking on a life of their own.
Yes.
And to me, I mean, my personal view, I think that's really what hell is going to be. Hell is going to be being entrapped by machines of our own creation and to be there without the love of God.
Okay.
Because to be anywhere forever without the love of God has got to be hell.
It's got to be. Thank Dr. Joseph Loeb. Thanks so much for coming by and talking with us, Dr. Loeb.
My pleasure.
Oh, by the way, how can someone get a hold of the news?
iBreakaway@live.com.
iBreakaway@live.com.
That's right. iBreakaway@live.com. Go on and live. iBreakaway@live.
All right. Dr. Joseph Loeb. Thank you again, Dr. Loeb.
Thank you so much.
And this has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.